I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic Airbrush Lex Tan. And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Shirley Gleason. 2020 has been a year of change and transition, and as we ease ourselves back out into the world, I think it's really important for us to acknowledge all we have been through over the last couple of months before we move on. It's been a tough time for many of us. It's triggered trauma. It's tested us, but many of us have been awakened to just how simple life can be, the beauty of the world around us, and just how much we love our friends and family. Today I speak to Shirley, a nature and well-being consultant who explains the benefits of nature and how it can heal us and give us clarity, relieve stress and give us inner peace. We speak about how we can protect ourselves and our families through this time, how we can understand stress better and how we can take positive steps to be happier. I hope you enjoy. Shirley, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here.
We have a lot of friends in common. You have spoken on my friend Claire McKenna's radio show and News Talk a number of times. Claire has been a guest on my podcast before. And Luke, who is my husband's best friend, has, I suppose he's on a new path and a new journey. And he is behind the Healing Forest in Kiltearnan. And you trained Luke in everything that he's doing at the moment. So I'm so excited for us to sit down and just talk about you and what you do. And I think my listeners are going to be so interested in today's podcast.
Oh, so delighted to be here, Georgia. Thanks so much.
So tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. So I'm a nature and well-being consultant. So I would do a lot of training. So I train forest bathing guides to bring groups out for eco-wellness and eco-tourism. And I also train forest therapy practitioners to run interventions for people who might be struggling with their mental health or their physical health. And I also do a lot of forest bathing experiences for groups. And lately, during COVID, it's interesting, I've been doing a lot of nature and well-being work for companies for staff well-being. So quite a lot.
Forest bathing, I suppose, is probably a new concept to many people in Ireland, and I think the history of it is fascinating. So can you tell us a little bit about it? It started in Japan, was it?
Yeah, so it started in Japan in 1982. So Japan is a country where there's a lot of work-related stress because there's such high expectations on the population. So they were having a number of workers who were actually dying as a result of work-related stress. There's a term called karoshi that's really specific to Japan. But Japan is also a really beautiful country where they have about 64% forest coverage. So they had a lot of work-related stress. They had a lot of forests. But they're also, their religion, one of their dominant religions is Shinto, which is a kind of where they revere nature. So it made sense for them to look at how they could bring nature together with stress. So they started doing a lot of research over in Japan. They spent millions of equivalent to euro, and now they have 64 different forest therapy bases right throughout Japan where doctors prescribe time in nature, and people would go and they would get their blood pressure and stress levels checked before and after. So it's a really serious concept, and then it's spread, you know, after Japan, it's spread to the States. That's where I did my training originally. because nobody had heard of forest bathing. So I went over to the States about 6 years ago and I trained. I was the first European guide to train. And then it started spreading throughout Europe, a lot of the Scandinavian countries, Germany. So I've been doing forest bathing work for the last 6 years in Ireland, but thankfully now we're training more guides. So it's the word is spreading about the importance of the practice.
Wow, it's so fascinating. And your personal interest in nature, your connection with nature, how did you find yourself on this path?
Yeah, so I suppose I grew up in the Midlands and I grew up around 5 minutes from Birr Castle in a really busy, stressful family. I mean, typical Irish families. There was seven of us all together. So anytime I had any chance when I was small, I used to go down to the castle in Birr and just spend time with the trees. I was quite an introvert, and I used to love just spending time by the lake with, you know, with the trees. So I would have kind of used nature for my own therapy. And then when I got older, when I was a teenager, like a lot of teenagers, there's a lot of stress again. And I would have like got on my bike and cycled to the nearest forest park, which was 25 kilometres, just to spend time with the trees, because it really helped me. So then I trained in social work and I would have worked for about 20 years with a lot of trauma and grief. Child protection, child and adolescent mental health, adult mental health. And I always saw how nature really supported everybody on their journey. So I wanted to combine my love of nature and my love of working with people. So that's when I started to do my trainings abroad to integrate everything.
And was that a big decision for you to walk away from everything that you knew in your life, your social work, everything you were doing on a day-to-day basis, to kind of take this plunge and follow your passion?
It was a big decision because I went to South Africa to train as a nature guide in 2008, and that was when the crash came, and everyone thought I was mad because I'd left a permanent job, and you know, social work is, you know, is a pretty good job in terms of all that, but I knew that there was something else for me. So I always knew that I think if you're really passionate about something and if you work really hard, that your time will come. So for me, it's only in the last, I would say, maybe 3 or 4 years that my time has really come in relation to this work. And I left, I started up my own business about 2 years ago, and I was really concerned at that point, you know, how would I make a living? How would I support my partner who was doing a full-time PhD? So I was the main breadwinner in the house. But now looking back on it, you know, it was the right decision to make. The work has just really opened up in terms of the possibilities, and there's such a need. There's really nobody doing a lot of the work in terms of forest bathing and nature and well-being. So it's an area that's really growing.
Mm. And when you went to America to train, and I suppose we're all becoming more aware of nature and there's a wider conversation around it currently. But back then, did people think maybe you'd lost your mind a little bit?
They did. It's funny. And it's actually really interesting because I had gone back into social work and I was working in medical social work in a really a busy hospital, and it was very stressful. It was really stressful for me. And again, I knew it was the right decision to make to leave. But people thought I was crazy. They didn't know what I was talking about. Even my own family, you know, my older siblings, you know, they said to me, "Oh, Shirley, you know, you want to go and do that charity work? That's up to you." They didn't understand the importance of it. But then I suppose the work has brought me to so many places. I mean, last year I was privileged to speak at the United Nations on forest and human health, and I've really had a lot of international opportunities to speak in different countries on it. So now my family is eventually saying, okay, you might be right there might be an interest in this work. But I think it's like anybody, you know, when you kind of introduce a new practice, people ask questions, but I've also got a lot of support along the way as well.
And I suppose I was thinking about this morning as I was driving in, my connection with nature started during my chemotherapy journey. And I say this in my corporate talks, that before I got cancer, I never wanted to be outside because I was the type of person that was like, oh, it's too cold to go out today. Or it just didn't appeal to me that much. Like, obviously, I loved going to the beach and I loved going for walks when I was on holidays and things like that. But I suppose getting out into the fresh air every day was just something that I didn't really do because I was so busy in work. And then when I was in chemo, my baby would sleep for 2 hours at lunchtime. And we just bought this house at the foot of the Dublin Mountains. And I remember I'd sit out because it was the summer of 2018 when it was really, really hot. And I'd sit out and I'd listen to the trees or listen to the birds singing. And I would feel happier. And every morning when I woke up during that time, it was like there was a cloud hanging over me. Like, it was that realization every day when I opened my eyes that I have to face this again. And my mum would come up and we'd go for a walk in the park and I'd come home and I'd feel happier. So I think after doing that for months on end, I started to become awakened to the fact that nature was healing me. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't read anything about it or anything like that. I suppose I came to that place myself. But it can be so healing. And what is the science behind it?
Sure. So that's interesting what you said, because an area that I'm really interested in, there's a whole concept. I mean, we all know the concept of post-traumatic stress, but a lot of people don't understand the concept of post-traumatic growth. And that's a really interesting concept, because when people face great adversity, like you really faced in terms of your illness, that people can go either way in terms of, you know, their development. And nature can really support people to in their own personal growth and development, because it can open them up to other possibilities. And it also acts like a mirror, you know, in terms of, you know, seeing metaphors in nature. You know, I know when I struggle, if I go out into nature, I might have a question and I can see kind of metaphors or meaning in nature in terms of old growth, decay, maybe the type of tree, you know, the flow of the water, things like that. But there's a whole science behind forest bathing. Attention restoration theory is a really interesting theory. So what that is, it means that when we spend a lot of time indoors on screens, we get exhausted, you know, and I know I feel that because during COVID, I had spent a lot of time on screens, you know, doing Zoom calls and I was pretty exhausted. But when we're out in nature, our attention is restored and everything is calmed down, is kind of calm, because we're looking at the clouds, we're looking at the sway of the trees, we're looking at the movement, we're hearing the bird song. So it's really restoring our attention. But also there's a research around the stress response, that the more stressed we are, the better nature is for us in terms of our bodies. So there's a lot of research done, especially people living in cities, because, you know, we're constantly being exposed to noise pollution. You know, again, because I grew up in the Midlands, I wasn't used to the sound of darts. I wasn't used to the sound of planes. And that was really difficult for me to adjust. So our bodies are constantly being bombarded with, you know, bright lights, loud sounds, strong smells, you know, air pollution. And that can really exhaust us. So when we go into nature, they're almost like restorative spaces. Things calm down for us and we get refreshed and revitalized.
Wow. And when you say stress, and obviously we know that stress is bad, but what does stress do? It puts us into this fight or flight mode, and sometimes we can be chronically stressed that we're just in fight or flight mode all the time without even realizing.
Yeah, so that's very common. You know, again, positive stress, you know, some stress is good because it gets us out of bed, it gets us to meet deadlines, it gets us, you know, to bring the children to the school, it gets us up and out. But when we have kind of chronic low-grade stress over a number of years, that can do significant damage. So we call that the allostatic load, when the level of stress just gets too much. And I know for myself personally, I would have experienced burnout in terms of my, that's one of the reasons that I went to train as a forest therapy guide, because I suppose I was just being exposed to so much grief, so much trauma, over about 20 years that it's just too much for anybody. And I remember one morning I got up and I couldn't function. I literally couldn't function. I was exhausted. So I knew I had to change something in terms of my lifestyle. But there's a lot of burnout. That's what we're seeing now, like, especially amongst the health professionals. And for me, in terms of the COVID crisis, like, I see a real concern in terms of the health workers. You know, who is going to support them through the crisis? In countries like Norway and in Denmark, they have nature gardens for stress and burnout. And that's something like, hopefully, you know, Luke's Forest in Kiltearnan. I mean, that's a really beautiful restorative environment. So hopefully we can maybe do some work there. That's, you know, what I'm interested in. But stress has a major impact on not only our physical health and our body, but our mental health as well and our mind.
And when somebody comes to you and says, I'm overwhelmed, yeah, I'm having heart palpitations, I'm so anxious, what can I do for myself? What is your answer?
Yeah, so I suppose when we work in forest bathing and forest therapy, we say the forest is the therapist. So we just say, look, just, you know, slow down a little bit, even though it's very hard for people to slow down initially, just to take the pressure off in terms of achieving. There's so much pressure now in terms of time pressure, in terms of achieving. Everything is so fast. So that's the first thing, is just take the pressure off and give yourself permission to take a little bit of time out. And then once we start bringing them into the forest and doing some of the forest invitations with them, they start to slow down a little bit, even though it can be difficult at the start. And the forest starts working its magic, really.
Mm-hmm. And I think I went forest bathing last Friday. It was my third time. So the first time I went, it was a really sunny, crisp day. The second time I went, it was raining, but, you know, we didn't get too wet because the trees sheltered us. And the third time we went last Friday, it was a beautiful sunny day as well. And I have to say, they were different experiences. And maybe every time you go to the forest, you have a different experience. Mm. But I remember the first time I went, I was recording a podcast on grief straight away afterwards. And I thought to myself, oh God, should I stay at home for this 2 hours and write out 100 questions for this podcast? Or should I go to the forest and just breathe? Mm-hmm. So I decided to do that. And I went in and the podcast was beautiful. It was a gorgeous conversation. But I think I went into it feeling calm, and I had clarity, and I think that's what the forest does for me.
Yeah, and for me too. You know, I mean, I get all my answers in the forest, and I laugh and I joke and I say it is cheaper than therapy. You know,
yeah.
But sometimes people do need therapy in their lives, and that's absolutely fine. But I think because we don't get the chance to have silence, I think there's a couple of really fundamental factors in terms of the forest bathing. One is silence, giving ourselves permission just to be silent, and the other is solitude. So, you know, sometimes we do a practice called sit spot where, you know, we invite participants just to maybe spend 15 or 20 minutes with a tree and just to notice what comes up. And that can be really powerful. Another invitation, which is quite playful and it really feeds into the imagination, is conversation with a tree. And that's when that's a really interesting one, because sometimes when I bring people out, I've got really serious scientists and biologists and botanists, and you know, they're saying, like, what is this about? So what we say is, just sit with a tree if you have an answer or if you have a question. You know, if there's something that you want support with in your life, maybe just put the question out and just listen to what comes back. So what we say is, that could be like a feeling, it could be an image, words could come into your mind, or maybe nothing at all. Mm-hmm. But it's a very powerful experience when you just sit with a tree and just be. Yeah.
And what is that connection that we have with trees? Like, why do we feel drawn to them?
Yeah, so there's a whole theory. It's an evolutionary theory, the biophilic hypothesis. So what that means is, we, you know, we are nature. We come from nature, and we've started to separate out from nature, and that's causing us a lot of distress and psychological trauma. There's a whole field of psychology now, eco-psychology, that's looking at the damage that's been done when people separate from nature in terms of their mental well-being. So we have that innate need really to be connected to nature. So I think when we sit with a tree, it's almost like for me personally, it's like, you know, you feel like you're going back home. You feel like you're reconnecting with something. And also participants, you know, on my walks would have described having a sense of they're part of something bigger. You know, a lot of people, unfortunately, nowadays have lost meaning and purpose. You know, they don't know their place in the world. They don't know what their role is. And they don't have a sense of being connected to anything in terms of maybe society. So when they spend time in nature in a real kind of mindful and contemplative way, they feel connected to something bigger. And I think that can be part of the beauty of the work.
And when we go into a forest or we go on a hike, should we feel like a guest in nature or should we feel like we are nature? Yeah. Is there a difference?
Yeah. So I think everyone will have a different feeling. I mean, that's the thing for me is that, you know, the other thing to say is that forest bathing might not be for everybody. Mm-hmm. There could be people that maybe have a phobia towards some things in nature, or if you were brought up in a city and if you didn't have a lot of exposure to forests when you were younger, initially it can be quite daunting for them, you know. And also it's the type of forest, you know. If you're in a really dense forest, that's not a therapeutic experience because it could be quite an anxious experience. So there's a lot of work being done on what, you know, healing forests and curative forests and what are the best type of forest, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think people can be whatever way they want to be. For me, it's about respect. You know, when I go into a forest, I really respect the forest. And I very firmly believe I am nature. But other people may not believe that, and that's okay.
And I suppose over the last couple of months, and it's really opened my eyes as I say drove to Jamie's mum's. She was cocooning, so we were dropping her down some food, or we were, you know, going for a walk ourselves. The volume of people out on the roads walking or in the parks, have you seen a shift in the world in the last 6 months?
Yeah, there's a major shift. You know, even where I walk, in terms of my 2 kilometres, I'm based in Shankill, so I'm lucky to have a park with the sea there, and so it's a beautiful space. But completely, I mean, I would get up and I go for a cycle early in the mornings, maybe about 7, and during COVID it was so busy, you know, and I was delighted to see it that busy. But I think, you know, people start competing for space then, which can also be an issue. But for me, the most important thing is the amount of families I saw out. You know, the amount of families, young children on their bicycles, families really slowing down, actually looking at the flowers, grown men stopping to check out the flowers, which was fantastic. And for me, that's really important because a lot of the research shows that if children aren't exposed to nature when they're younger, they're not going to have a strong relationship with the natural environment as they're older. And there's a lot of work now being done on the concept of extinction of experience in terms of nature, that children aren't getting exposed to nature, so they don't know what it's like. So if all the forests are chopped down in the morning, they're not going to miss them because they don't know what it's like. But definitely I saw a big shift, and I know Natural England, they did some research that showed something like 60% of people said their nature connection was stronger since COVID. So because they realised how important nature was to them.
Wow. Yeah. And I guess that's, and I always talk about giving yourself the gift of time, and I think COVID gave us time. Yeah. And before, you just whiz by something and not stop to maybe appreciate it, or you jump in the car and drive somewhere because you were under the constraints of a schedule. But I think COVID, a lot of people got bikes, that like we got bikes in our family, and we started to cycle places instead of driving. And it really make, like, even my child who's 3 would sit on the back of the bike, and it's literally like she's done it all her life.
Yeah, no, I mean, completely. And I think, you know, people have said that they've never seen spring before. I mean, it's funny, but that's you know, what people said, that they never really stopped to notice, you know, the birds coming in, the buds on the trees. You know, they've really experienced spring. And I think it's given them a window into the possibilities of a life that people could have. But I think with that it comes a lot of loss, because the reality is, in terms of people have long commute times, they have a lot of pressures. You know, they mightn't be able to work from home, and that can be really difficult. So for me, it's really important to get the balance, how they can keep the contact with nature and still resume, you know, their day-to-day life.
And how much nature should we be exposed to? And what, I suppose, is nature? Is nature going for a walk outside, or is it in a park or a forest?
Yeah. So again, I suppose I always focus on the research in terms of the evidence. The research around nature and well-being is 120 minutes a week is recommended. So if you think about like your five a day fruit and vegetables, they say maybe 20 minutes outside six times a week would be your 120 minutes. That would be the minimum. So obviously, if you can be outside for more than that, that would be great. In terms of the work we do, you know, there's different experiences, there's different health benefits from maybe watching nature documentaries, which can have certain health benefits, right through to going out in the complete wilderness. So there's a whole spectrum of nature. But for me, the most important thing is the concept of nearby nature. You know, where can people get access to nature on their doorstep? Because people can't get into their car maybe and drive an hour to beautiful spaces. You know, I mean, where we live, we're blessed because Powers Court is 20 minutes from us and Mount Usher is down the road and we have all those beautiful spaces. But the reality is a lot of people can't get to those really beautiful spaces. So it's about how they can develop a relationship with nature on their doorstep, whether in their garden, their local park, or if they're lucky enough to get to a beautiful forest.
I think that's so interesting what you say about even watching a nature documentary. Or I heard you in another interview saying, you know, listening to a soundtrack of nature just in your earphones, because I think and that brought up something for me. I thought about when you get on a train and you're in the city and then you go into the countryside on the train and you're just looking out the window at the sea or the mountains, you feel happier. Because you're exposed to it. So you don't actually physically have to be outside. You can be watching or listening. And I think that's important for people who may be in hospital, who aren't able to get outside, to open their eyes, that you could watch it or listen to it. And that has benefits too.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we're looking at the moment. I'm part of the Forest Therapy Institute, which is, it's based in Portugal, but we train guides all over the world. And that's an area we're looking at, is the virtual forest bathing experiences. So we're working at the moment with a filmmaker who's done amazing nature kind of documentaries and footage to bring nature to places that it needs to go. So for me, I would love to see beautiful nature documentaries in hospitals, in prisons especially, but also in psychiatric facilities where people can't get access to nature. But also there's a big interest in this area with companies for their staff well-being in terms of, you know, podcasts and virtual forest bathing experiences. So I think a lot of industries are embracing the concept about nature and well-being.
And are we going to see like the Googles and Facebooks leading the way into, like, say, is Luke going to have a busload of Google executives arriving at his forest first? Are they the companies that are going to kind of trailblaze for the rest of us?
So I think they already are in terms of the biophilic design. A lot of them would use the concept of biophilic design in their offices, which is they bring nature in for their staff. So they'd have like nature pods, they'd have maybe nature bird song. It's interesting, I was in the little coffee shop next door and they were playing bird song in the bathroom.
Were they?
But that's fantastic, because that, I think that's the future in terms of bringing nature in. So a lot of companies are understanding the importance of the biophilic design, but also there's a concept of biomimicry, which is how we can learn lessons from nature in terms of developing new technologies. So nature has been brought in many different ways.
Wow, so fascinating. Tell us then about the forest bathing, because it's every time I've gone, it's been different, but it always ends with a tea ceremony. Is that right?
So a tea ceremony can be one way to end, but sometimes we end in other ways, some kind of a gathering that brings people together. So for me, sometimes I would do some eco art. We would do some poetry in nature to finish the gathering, or we might make tea from the foraged plants. So it depends. I mean, the tea is very common, because I think it's a real Irish thing as well, but there's other ways to end. I mean, the most important thing is that people can maybe say a little bit about their experience and bring something home that's important to them.
And I wanted to ask you about other ways of immersing yourself in nature. So obviously going to the forest is one way, and then sea swimming, which we're seeing more and more people do these days. Obviously, one isn't better than, you're not going to get more benefits from one or the other, are you?
No. I mean, it's really interesting because we had a 4-day summit, I think 2 weeks ago, where we had speakers on from all over the world. And there was an adventure therapist doing this program for burnout for mental health professionals in the Alps. And he was using swimming in lakes, the really cold, the Wim Hof stuff. And he was also using the nature connection work with the participants. So that was the first time I saw the two of them together. So the most important thing is, whatever nature experience you enjoy, you know, that's the most beneficial for you. I always remember somebody saying, a health promotion class, what's the best exercise? You know, I was thinking, that's a really good question. What is the best exercise? And they said, it's the one that you'll do. So it's the same in terms of nature, whatever gets you out of the house.
And your self-care techniques then, obviously nature is a huge part of your life. Is there anything else that you do? Like, do you practice meditation? Is your meditation always outside?
Yeah, so my meditation will be outside. But I love art, just messing around with art. I love poetry. We have two beautiful Maine Coon cats at home, so I would hang out with them. But also cycling. I love cycling, and that kind of really calms me down. So,
and tell us then about prescribing forest bathing. They're doing it in Japan. I heard they've started to do it in Scotland. I may be wrong. Are they doing it in Ireland yet?
Not yet. So there's a lot of research on the benefits of nature for health. It's really interesting. I was on a webinar just 2 days ago. It was from Europarks. So Europarks are the European organization responsible for all the parks in Europe, and they've introduced healthy parks, healthy people into Europe. So there's a real focus. It was their launch. So there's a real focus on the area of nature and health and parks. So for me, that's a start, you know, in terms of possibly getting doctors to prescribe it. The World Health Organization has said that nature-based interventions and forest bathing would come under that. It's almost unrivaled in terms of the benefits they have for the social health, your physical health and mental health. So hopefully we'll see doctors prescribing forest bathing, forest therapy and other nature-based interventions soon in Ireland.
Yeah, because I'm actually in an exercise class with my GP, and we had a chat about 6 months ago just outside the class, and she said, like, how are you getting on? Because I just see my consultants now. I don't really see my GP that often. And I said, you know, I'm doing great and I love being outside and I've really connected with nature. And she said, you know what, I tell my patients all the time, you just need to get outside. And that's kind of the first step. But it would be amazing to see more and more doctors just being open to that side of things.
I know when I worked in a private mental health facility for a number of years, and I would always present to the doctors on the doctor's training day and the doctor's training evenings on the health benefits of nature, and they were very positive about it. So I think at the moment doctors are under a serious amount of pressure themselves, you know. I think in the next few years we might see more doctors prescribing time in nature.
And how do we heal from the last 6 months? Like, how do, like you said, like medical staff, like, I think COVID has had such a huge impact on all of our kids. How do we start to rebuild?
I think the most important thing is just to be gentle with ourselves. You know, I know I know, I mean, we've struggled, myself and my partner struggled, like a lot of people. There's only two of us in the house, and you know, when there's only two of you in the house for 3 months, it's going to be a struggle, and anyone we've spoken to has really struggled. So I think it's just about really being gentle with yourself and just to acknowledge the huge grief. You know, there's a lot of grief there. I was on a call last night. I trained a group of forest bathing guides from West Cork, the West Cork Forest Bathing group, and one of the guides said that she brought out a small group recently, and three of them started to cry, you know, on her first walk. So there's huge grief for people. So I think just to be gentle with ourselves, just acknowledge the grief, and just to try and pick ourselves up, but just to expect that it's not going to be business as usual, and it shouldn't be business as usual, because, you know, the pace we were going at was absolutely crazy in terms of the damage it was causing to people's health, but also families, you know. So I think there's going to be a huge readjustment, and that's what we're seeing now is this is going to be the really difficult period, because the crisis period is over, and now we're trying to readjust to what we don't know is the new normal. So there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of anxiety, and just to know that's okay. If you're feeling overwhelmed, it's to be expected, and you're not the only one.
Yeah, when I booked in to Luke's Forest last Friday, it was like a 2 hour thing from 10 to 12. Luke brings you on a number of different stops around the forest, and you meditate at different points. And at the first stop, and I hadn't really thought about this before I went up, but I was like, I need to have compassion for myself. Like what you said, acknowledging what's happened over the last 4 months, you know, the struggle for people to keep their businesses going, to keep their kids happy, you know, their partner happy, you know, their own anxiety over going out and maybe having to be the one that goes to the supermarket, not seeing our parents or our family. And I sat down for 15 minutes and I just thought about everything that we had been through, everything we've sacrificed. And I thought, God, like, well done. That was tough going. But I think it's only when you acknowledge something that you can kind of start to rebuild.
I think so. And I think that's where, you know, nature really comes to its own in terms of compassion. So the first thing is, sometimes people have compassion for others, but they don't have compassion for themselves. And that can be the hardest thing. So that's what I was saying about just be gentle. But also in terms of nature, beauty, you know, we really need beauty now, you know, in terms of nature, you know, seeing beautiful flowers, having the experience of beautiful trees, beautiful spaces, that would really help lift us out of some of that grief. And for me, that's, you know, I see some of the health services, and, you know, I worked in both the private and public sector, so I saw the difference. But some health clinics are so grim. There, you go in, it's just grey. It's grey, it's noisy. And I thought, like, why could they not have, like, beautiful images of nature up, beautiful art, to really lift people's spirits? So I think in Ireland we have a huge history in terms of, you know, creativity and our soul and our spirit, and a lot of that comes from nature. If you think about the poets and artists, just to expose ourselves to beautiful spaces. So I know when things are really going tough for me, I would go to Paris Court Gardens, I would go to Mount Usher, I would go to the most beautiful places I could find and just spend time there.
Wow. And then do you feel when you're leaving different to when you arrive?
Yeah, definitely. I feel more hopeful. I feel more alive. I feel I have greater clarity and perspective, but also calmer in myself.
Wow. And when we talk about rebuilding, and there's so many people now, I think, who were in a period of transition, who are now saying, the way I lived my life before is not how I want to live my life going forward. And that can be just a very difficult emotion.
Yeah, that I think that, you know, that can be can be a little bit dangerous as well in terms of the awareness. You know, when people's awareness grows about how they're really stuck with something, that can be a difficult place for people to be in. So the reality is, for some people, I mean, it took me I'd say 10 years to get to where I am in terms of my nature career, and I had to go through a lot of periods of saying, I don't want to be here, I want to be there. But I had to kind of work along the way and be gentle with myself and take baby steps and say, okay, the time is not right yet. So I think when you can see another way, but you can't see how to get it, that can be quite difficult. So what I'd say to people is just to keep hopeful and maybe start making those baby steps towards their new way of living that they want to experience. Because there are financial constraints, there's relationships and family constraints, but you can move towards what you want. It's really important.
And do you think that, I'll leave it with this question, that we are becoming more awakened? Are you hearing from more and more people on a weekly basis that want to discover this industry or this field further?
Yeah, that's a surprising thing for us, because we didn't, we have forest bathing guide training coming up in September in Wicklow, but we didn't advertise or do anything for it over the period of COVID, because we just didn't want to, we felt it wasn't right, you know. But the amount of people that have contacted us wanting to train in this area, because they see the benefits of it, they experience it themselves, and they want to engage in more meaningful work. So I think there has been a real awakening. I think we have a real opportunity here, you know, in terms of moving forward. So hopefully we can use it wisely.
Wow, it's so fascinating. And I would encourage anyone who's listening who wants to learn more or would like to go on a forest bathing experience to check out The Healing Forest on Instagram. And Shirley, where can we get in touch with you or find out more about your business?
Sure. So ecowellnessconsulting.com.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much for today. I've learned so much.
Thank you so much for having me on, Georgia. And hope people just get out and just spend some time in nature. So
amazing. Great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more on my story, follow me on Instagram, Georgie.com.